Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the...
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. And here today with me is Daniel. Hello.
Hello, it's me, and hello, all you odd listeners. Hope you're well.
The oddballs. Dan, I want you to close your eyes and imagine a world where technology is part of your everyday life.
Wow.
Where you can't exist without having something strapped to your body, where you slowly feel like you're turning into a machine. No, this isn't a new wearable by Apple. This is Tetsuo / the Iron Man. The Iron Man. It's not Robert Downey Jr.
And it's not Ted Hughes.
It's, in fact, and let me see if I can pronounce this right, Shinya Tsukamoto's first feature-length film, Tetsuo, which was released in 1989. And it was an extremely low-budget, arty, black-and-white, body horror. Some people call it cyberpunk, which I'm not sure about. We can kind of get into that actually. Movie about essentially a couple of guys getting freaky with metal.
Very freaky.
Very freaky indeed. So yeah, for people that don't know, it is truly an oddity. I think it's I think it rightfully belongs as part of the Oddcast lineup. So just a little bit of background on the actual plot, because it's not that apparent. And actually, apparently when it was, screened at festivals, because it was made on such a low budget, which we can actually get into later, they couldn't subtitle it. So
why?
A lot of the people who were first watching this, they didn't have the money to subtitle it. So a lot of people were just watching it, not understanding anything that's being said, and it still made that kind of impression. I think that's fine. Like, it's still kind of, it's kind of like arty enough. I haven't used the word arty, but it's where you can, you don't, it could be another language, well, it is another language, but in, you don't need to understand.
You don't need the dialogue.
Exactly, to know kind of what's going on.
That was my, kind of one of my takeaways, actually, before you go into the plot.
Mm.
I was watching it thinking, the plot is secondary here, and really it's an experience, isn't it? It's about visuals that I think explore some sort of, well, we'll go into that a bit deeper, but some sort of like fear or phobia of technology, and some sexual disgust. And you don't really need to probe or inquire into the plot to really take away that message. And yet at the same time, there is a plot. There is a distinctive plot. And it's quite fun sort of like seeing that unfold and like trying to decode it to a degree.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of stuff in it that's up for interpretation, but let's just, I'll just give a kind of loose overview, as much as I understood it and read up about it anyway. But basically it's about a guy who I think is titled like the fetishist or something, within the actual character names, who starts sticking stuff into, we see him stick a pipe into his leg. That's how the film opens, which is pretty cool. And then, and it's a really gruesome, horrible shot as well.
Yeah.
And he gets infected and he runs out and he basically gets hit by a car. And then it cuts to this couple, or this salaryman, as they're called. Apparently that's a, it's a Japanese term, the salaryman as well, who is basically kind of trying to get about his day. And we'll go into the details of this. And he starts turning into metal, basically. He starts having all these metal bits. And then you realize that the guy from the beginning who got hit by the car is somehow having this kind of like power where he's able to get revenge on this guy and his wife, who you find out later down the line were the ones that hit him with the car, dumped his body, and then proceeded to have sex while staring at his lifeless corpse, which I guess was still semi-alive or whatever, on the ground. And then, so it's kind of like a revenge thing, but then it ends up with them two basically coming together and falling in love and then seeing a new, putting in a new world or whatever. They talk about how we're going to take over the world, and they develop into this big hulk of metal that kind of roams the streets of Japan. And that's basically the film, but there's loads and loads of cool stuff that happens within that. Dan, because I don't, you hadn't seen this before, right?
I had seen it once before.
Oh, had you? Right.
Probably around 20 years ago, in your bedroom.
No, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize we'd seen it together.
Yeah. I think this was a favorite of yours for quite a long time, right? Because, yeah, I always remember you going on about it, and we definitely watched it together. And I mean, I think I liked it at the time. It probably didn't make that much of an impression on me because I haven't really given it another thought in the ensuing 20 years.
Yeah.
But I think I probably got a little bit more out of it watching it this time around. But it's pretty much as I remembered it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's got its own certain style.
Oh, yeah.
It's just fucking cool. Like, so, like, why is it cool? So a lot of it, it's all black and white. And the reason why it's kind of black and white isn't just a stylistic thing, but also because all the metal shit, basically, that's all over them, apparently was like literally like sellotaped on at some points. So instead of doing it colour and it being looking tacky, they played the fact that it's black and white. And so all that kind of grey and black and white obviously plays into the fact that it's very metal and silvery, and it, it plays with, it just looks a lot better. It looks literally like chunks of wood, because it's all different weird kind of metals, because you've got, they use like a foil, and then it, sometimes it's a bit liquidy. Sometimes it's just this massive stuff and wires and whatever.
Sometimes it looks a bit like mollusks and stuff growing on their hands as well, which is quite strange, like coral, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's like, yeah, like it's infected. Like some kind of growth.
Yeah. Sometimes it looks quite organic as opposed to just metal, which is even more sort of like disgusting in a way.
Yeah. Exactly. And also, like, one cool thing which always stands out when people watch it is a lot of it's in, like, stop motion.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, which is really cool. It's got a lot of, like, well, like, flash imagery, like a lot of random cuts and bits, and it's like, it is body horror, like, because part, as it's kind of going on, it's like this painful, horrible ordeal for these people as they're like molding into this like metal slash human being.
Yeah.
It just looks great to watch. And it's all like very industrial. The music is very proper industrial. Like,
yeah. In your face. Know,
like the early Rammstein or something. Yeah. I don't know. Like proper, like, you know, like we talk about with Depeche Mode actually and all that stuff. Like
yeah.
It's got this kind of pistons kind of sounding stuff. It's all really like sweaty, like there's a wetness to it as well. Like everyone's like feverish, and it is literally nightmare fuel. It feels like one big nightmare, and there's actually sequences in it that are supposed to be nightmares, I guess, like they wake up yeah. and things like that.
One thing about
super
that
fast
that like sweaty grime that you mentioned that's the thing. It's like, even though it's like black and white and machinery, it's very, it feels very dirty. Like that initial scene yes, right. where he's inserting the rod, you can feel like the grime and the grit in there. It just feels like so vile.
Yeah.
The other thing about the black and white, I thought it gives it a sort of like gritty, almost snuff movie like feel.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it feel almost like something you've like discovered under the counter somewhere, something illegitimate.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's like dirt. It's like proper dirty and horrible.
You feel like you're watching it, like, something you shouldn't be watching.
Yeah, but it's true though. It's mad. It's crazy. Like it's kind of like a, because it's only like 70 minutes or something. I don't even think it's not 90 minutes. I don't think it's quite, it's relatively short. It feels like a music video, like a really cool one. There's loads of sequences within it where I was just like, you could put, and I think we used it for one of our songs. I think I might have stuck some Tetsuo stuff over one of our sales tracks.
Huh.
But yeah, just having any kind of music over it, it just looks, I don't know, it's like, I want to say like Nine Inch Nails, also like those early kind of Tool music videos.
I know what you mean. That, yeah.
Because it's like slightly animated, if you know what I mean.
That's it. It's that stop motion stuff where people are moving, and it's a really arresting sort of effect, and it makes everything feel very frenetic and obviously very like jerky. Which is just a really cool visual. And then when you've got the music on top of that, you can see, yeah, that feels like it was quite influential of some of the stuff that came in the mid-90s.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And there's definitely like a, like, apparently Tsukamoto is a big fan of Cronenberg, so the body horror stuff, he doesn't shy away from that, which is cool. It's very Eraserhead. Like, Eraserhead had an industrial feel to it as well.
That was my first thought, like first scene, and especially when you see someone and you're not aware at that point, like someone's working away somewhere behind all these wires and things, and obviously later it becomes the fetishist, as you call him. That really reminded me of some of the opening scenes with Eraserhead, where you see someone just like working away somewhere removed from most of the main action.
Yeah, well, you got the man in the moon, or whatever he's called.
Yeah,
that weird like growth. On his face or something, I can't remember now. But yeah, it's like, yeah, you're kind of right. You're straight in, basically. Yeah, and also like, yeah, as you were saying, like the metal, like when people would see like, oh, it's like the Iron Man or like, yeah, man combining with a machine and stuff. It's not like, they're not like Terminators or, you know, fucking Wally iPod robots or whatever. Things are like, it's, as you said, it is like dirty, greasy, gritty, yeah. Horrible, like, you know, bottom of the factory kind of metal, and all this is like pipes and rusty and all this stuff. It just feels disgusting and horrible.
And by the end, they look like characters from like a Clive Barker, like Nightbreed or Pinhead or something. You know, they don't look like cool robots. They look like they're suffering, and they're just like part of an amorphous mass. Like someone's face coming out of what would you assume is somebody else's arse or something.
Yeah. It's funny you say Clive Barker, because like the whole thing with Hellraiser as well is like the thin line between pain and pleasure. And this is kind of part of that as well. Like, and we'll kind of go into those kind of kinky aspects of it, I guess. So, should we take a bit of a break and then we can kind of, I think let's go into the kind of sequence of events of stuff that happens in the film. Because you can kind of split it up quite nicely, I think, in terms of what happens. And then, we can delve a little bit deeper into the world of the Iron Man.
I am Iron Man. I am Iron Man.
Do you think that was playing the whole time whilst they were making this? Do you know the story about like how this was made or anything
about it?
I'll kind of briefly. It was basically filmed across 18 months, and apparently everyone fell out and like everyone left every day. Everyone was staying apparently in the same place apart from the main actor guy who kind of came and went. But crew members apparently were just dropping out like flies.
Why?
Like because the working conditions were just so horrible. And obviously they were getting like fucking piss for it as well.
Is it normal for an indie film like that to take 18 months? Because I imagine like they would have done it over the course of like a week.
No. You think with that stop motion, that would have taken loads of time.
Yeah, but that's all post-production, isn't it?
Well, it's not in the edit. You still need to film it. So, yeah, they still would have had to light it and get it all together, whatever, and all this stuff. I can see something like that taking 18 months. But, yeah, you think of, like, Eraserhead took, like, years, didn't it? It's like three years or something stupid.
Yeah, wow. So it's like a real labour of love. Just filming
it every other weekend. Yeah, exactly. And he'd done a couple of shorts, one of which I think was similar to this generally. But the camera work was basically him and the girlfriend who's in it. So she did a lot of it. And I think you can kind of tell because there's a certain style to it, but it does feel like some of the shots they use feel quite photographic, let's say.
Yes.
I quite like the fact they've got like random shots of like the factories or like weird close-ups of certain bits and all that. And I just think that's, I don't know, for some reason, I just think maybe that's more her. I don't really know where I've got that from. Apparently they all like don't talk to each other. Like everyone hates each other by the end of it. And it just has this reputation for just like being an awful experience for everyone who was involved in it at any point. And they don't like to this day as well. Like not even as if like, well, whatever. And apparently, Tsukamoto said that at one point he considered just burning the film's negative because he had such a bad time.
Wow. With it. Jesus Christ.
It's like that was how bad it was. Basically, it opens out with, let's call him the fetishist, whatever. And the kind of opening shot here plays into, I don't know if you know this, but for my dissertation, for my degree, I talked about the post-human or the transhuman and feminism, basically, which isn't quite happening here, but the idea of the cyborg being the post-human human. And this kind of works into it a little bit, and you kind of see evidence of it in the sense of if you look around his room, there's loads of like pictures of like athletes and things like that.
Yeah.
So when you think about that, that's like they're at the peak of human physicality, let's say.
Yeah.
Like, it can't get any further than like top athletes or whatever. So he's obviously enamored by this kind of but how far the body can go or whatever you could take away from that. Hence, he wants to push it further and he gets this horrible metal rod and he, very gruesomely, it's very explicit. And I love the way as well, like, and you'll see this happen often throughout the film, is that when he drives that pipe in, you'll see it, like, he pushes it in and then it's like an explosion of blood, like a release. And that happens again, like, later on when the guy has it in his face and things are popping and all this stuff. Even that, it's like sexual. Do you know what I mean? It's like this...
an eruption.
It's like this, an eruption basically coming out. And there's something cathartic about that in itself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And obviously a pipe. I mean, you see pipes throughout and they're all fucking, you know, sexual, phallic instruments or whatever. Anyway, he's sticking it into himself. And then it cuts to, I don't know, somewhere down the line. And he undoes his straps and you just see all these maggots kind of crawling out. So it's got infected. Then he's legging it down the street and that's when he gets hit by the car. But what happens is you see the car come close and then it comes on with this like jazz music. It's like lounge music and it's kind of sweeping across the headlights and like it says New World comes up at one point, which doesn't come back until the end. But and it's quite weird. What did you think about like that bit? Like what do you think about that segment?
Yeah, I really liked that. I don't know. This is just me chucking some ideas out here. I don't know if they're going to be coherent or not. Mm. But it made me think a lot of like post-war music in Japan.
Okay.
Because basically around the sort of like 70s, some of them started adopting more like American, like doo-wop, rock and roll, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And by the sort of time that this film was made, it had been assimilated into like more of a mainstream sort of Japanese sound. So to me, it feels a little bit like maybe something to do with this, like, yeah, like post-war, like almost like optimism. Because generally, I know obviously like the theme here is mostly around like relationship with technology. But, and I haven't seen all that much Japanese film, to be honest. But I've read quite a bit of like novels and bits and pieces. Mm. Some of the best Japanese sort of authors of the like, 80s and 90s, especially someone I like called Kenzaburo Oe. Okay. And a lot of his stuff is kind of surreal in this fashion. And it's often to do with like guilt and anxiety around the Second World War.
Mm.
And I did notice some stuff that I thought related to like war and conflict comes up later. Mm. And I just wondered if this is somehow some sort of reflection on like a new dawning, like a break with an older generation of Japan, and that this is now an era of modernity. And it starts with a car crash and a collision.
Mm. It's interesting as well because, as I guess, it is a piece of technology as well, like crashing into you or whatever, like the car.
Killer cars.
What you're saying, exactly. It's interesting what you're saying about like the World War II thing, because there's part of the theme, and especially what's happening around films at this time. Like if you look at, it's probably not the best example, but like Akira or something like that, where like the future technology is kind of. There's just this fear of technology in Japanese films around, especially around this time when it was all kicking off. And as you said, there's a lot of anxiety about it and people, you know, there was like Hiroshima or whatever and stuff like that. Like people were a little bit, as you said, like anxious, like worried about it. And at the same time, there's also this like a loss of tradition, like, and that's the kind of constant push and pull, which is like the Japanese tradition, and the fact that they're on the cutting edge of technology, and a lot of the traditional stuff kind of goes out the window. So there's a deep-rooted fear there.
Yeah, and fear about then what that might bring in terms of like these strange sexual behaviors. But the thing that made me jump forward and kind of make have that thought, connect that dot, was the fact that there's a scene later on where somebody's telling him. And I assume it's like a flashback that he's got a piece of metal in his brain and they can't remove it. And I just thought that's like war shrapnel.
Shard. Yeah.
It's shrapnel. And it's all of this is a result. And that's when it starts happening to this guy, and he starts turning. Probably the I assume that's the fetishist they were talking to.
Yeah.
And that's probably what begins his like assimilation of other pieces of metal into his body.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Didn't think about that. Yeah, that is good. So yeah, I mean, that's the kind of running theme. I was thinking like as well, like when people, I recommend people go back and listen to my thing about The Ring, the Japanese one versus the American one, and how I actually hated the American one when it first came out. And then I actually think I like it better in retrospect than the Japanese original one.
How come?
For many reasons, which I won't go into now, but it's worth listening to. But for that, part of that was me suggesting as well, like, the Japanese tradition versus technology and all this stuff. And that was around this time. I think that was like 91. And this is, what did I say? Like 88, 89, 89. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's all happening around this time. It's all
Do you know how old he was when he made this film, the director?
I don't know.
I'm assuming he's a young guy.
Yeah. So he was 29 when he did it.
Yeah. Relatively young.
Yeah, so pretty young. Yeah, I mean, he'd done, as I said, done two shorts, but this was his first feature. So then you cut to this, and I can't remember what sequence this happens, but it cuts to the salaryman, who is actually kind of our main character, kind of from now on. And I think, I can't remember if it happens before or after. When do the titles come up? Is it before he's shaving or after?
I can't quite remember either, but it takes ages because I was trying to get a screenshot.
Right. Because I remember, like, yeah. So let's just say it's around now, but I like the way, like, he's doing this, like, manic, like, movements, but it kind of looks like dancing. And it kind of reminded me a bit of, like, Talking Heads or something.
Yeah. Because he's got the glasses on as well. It's like David Byrne in Once in a Lifetime video.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's got these kind of like jerky movements, but you could mistake it for dancing. It's really weird. Yeah. And then Tetsuo comes up on these big letters, but it's all like static, and that kind of comes into play later as well a little bit. So you see, it's a cool sense of stylization where you see things through like a TV. And you get static, and you as the viewer kind of getting static coming in, and they play with static. And sometimes you're looking at static, and then a character will come in front of it, and all this stuff. So you're not quite sure. And also, obviously, it's like technology and all this stuff again.
Yeah, I love that.
And he's like, he's like kind of doing this movement, this dancing, whilst it's like saying slowly crawling Tetsuo. And I remember thinking that is such a cool title sequence with the industrial like rhythm music kind of going on behind it. I was like, yeah, I'm in.
Another thing I love about that visual of the sort of like VHS effect, I mean, it's just the variety of sequences and kind of like, what do you call it when you go from one scene to the other?
Transition.
That's the one, thanks. He really is creative with those. Because sometimes it's like a VHS being rewound.
Yeah.
And it's really disorientating, and it creates this like, well, part of that kind of like nightmare. But sometimes you see things like you mentioned all that stuff about he's got all those pictures of sportsmen. They go to like an animation of like some of those pictures and pages like burning and charring and like disintegrating to nothing. And there's just a lot of like, yeah, playfulness, it feels like really experimenting with what's possible.
Yeah, it also feels like every single shot, and I really mean this, every single shot is considered. So it's a lot of fast cutting, but it's a lot of fast cutting between very specific individual shots. So it's not like, you know, you and me are talking and it's just cutting between us two. It's like, it'll be like a close-up of our face doing whatever. Something's on the wall, something's melting, something's growing up from the ground.
Yeah.
Like, and all this stuff, but each, like, even if it's like 2 or 3 seconds, you could tell a lot of work went into like setting that shot up. And it just looks like hard work. It looks like really hard work to have made it. And it's really impressive how they've been able to do that. But yeah, you've got this like salaryman guy who, and again, like, he kind of, his apartment is like small. I mean, it's Japan, but like, it's all a bit like, it's not great. It's not like this, you know, lovely place or anything. It's just, it's a bit normal though at this point. And he's kind of going to shave his palm and he sees like a little bit of like a circuit or something. It's like it's from a circuit board, like a fuse or something kind of coming out of his face. And as he's touching it, it pops like a spot, but like it's like blood. He's like, ugh. So then he's got like a massive plaster on his face. And he goes to a train station on his way to work, you imagine, or whatever. Sits down and there's this like very prim, proper woman sitting next to her. And she sees something on the floor and she starts reaching towards it. And then you're like seeing it through a monitor, like firsthand, which is really weird. And then you start seeing shots of this like guy who looks like he's just greased up with oil and just covered in like all this metal and this like weird, dank, I don't know, like what would you call it? Like shell or something, like all this stuff around him.
It's, yeah, you can't tell. It's really disorientating.
Yeah. And you, yeah, and all you can see is like the back of some guy's head and there's loads of noise that's being made and whatever. And, oh, and yeah, before he's gone to work, he's like on the phone saying hello to his like girlfriend or someone, which is really weird. He's surrounded by cats. And so already you're a bit like, this is weird, because they're just saying hello, I think it is anyway, to each other for like, I want to say like a minute. It feels like ages. And then I was thinking, it's like I was thinking about that, thinking, what? Why is it that? And is it because it's like that lack of human, we're kind of all, and this is me really being wanky about it, but like trying to search out for that human kind of connection and kind of almost like a radar, like putting yourself out there or something, like two ships in the night or whatever, trying to talk to each other. But also how I was thinking, is it a case of like the dialogue doesn't matter?
I think,
is it an art choice to be like, I don't know.
What, you're like a comment on the dialogue in this film doesn't matter? And he's putting that out from the offset.
Maybe it was just the fact that this isn't that kind of film. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it creates like a sort of icy mood of like disconnect. Something feels off, basically. Yeah. It's like these people are not communicating in a normal human way.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because... yes, because they're humans, but they're actually not, as you said, not connecting. And then they do have a bit of dialogue later, actually, where she's like, oh, the hit and run incident, I'm still thinking about it, whatever. But it's funny because obviously the technology brings them together in the end. And also, like, that's what technology does these days, isn't it? Brings us together. But yeah, so it's a bit weird. So at first you're like, okay, it's a bit weird. And by the way, chip in if I've any specific stuff I've forgotten about. But yeah, so this woman like touches this thing, and then all of a sudden the guy like turns around and she's scratching her arm, like, and it's really horrible. And that's this thing. It's always something physical and horrible and disgusting kind of going on.
Oh God, that was something I wanted to say. We've missed it, but you know that first scene where he's putting the rod in his leg?
Yeah.
Shortly after that, and this is even more unpleasant to me, they do this thing where he's got, and this rod, it's like ridged, and you see a close-up of it being run through his teeth.
Yeah.
And you like hear the sound, the little chink, 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 chink. Yeah. And that to me was so visceral and unpleasant. I mean, that was like the proverbial, like, fingers down the chalkboard. Except really? It's like 100 times worse.
It didn't bother me that much.
Oh, the thought of like metal in your teeth. I don't know. Yeah,
it's a good point.
Not like that.
Yeah, that's funny. I thought it was some kind of like, just trying to create, well, it does create an effect, but I thought it's like a sound effect kind of thing rather than a...
I got an emotional response out of me.
Brilliant. And this kind of woman goes like zombified, basically, and she starts like following him and attacking him, and he's like running away. And you've got this cool scene, like he's hiding in a toilet, I think it is, and she's like climbing after him, but she's getting more and more like robotic. At one point she like squishes her tit till it explodes. which is like another like sexual kind of thing. And she is kind of getting a bit like, she does this kind of like weird thing with her chin and her arm, which I'm doing to Dan now, but no one else can see it. It's like, so she's kind of was all like prim and proper to begin with. And now like, she's gone a bit like wild, like a frenzied attacker, but there's also something slightly like sexual about her now that wasn't there before.
A macabre sexuality.
Yeah, exactly. And she chases him down, but as she's chasing him, he's like starting to turn more like robotic, basically more metally. And he's like able to like overpower her basically. And at one point he gets these like jet shoes that grow through his feet. He's got these like fucking, what would you call them? Like,
I don't know. Something, they're like something from a computer game, right?
Like exhaust pipes coming out the back of his ankles that allow him to like speed through the streets. And this goes on for a while, this little like fight scene stuff. They're like kind of fighting each other. It's all quite bloody and horrible. He stabs her with a pen, I think, at some point or whatever. And then this is where it starts, like that bit's already a bit fucked up, but then it starts getting really fucked up. So then he's having a dream or something, or he thinks it's a dream.
Yeah, the fight doesn't really resolve itself, but suddenly he's like back in his apartment. And like, so I assumed, okay, actually all of that episode was a dream.
Mm.
Is that your reading of it?
Yeah. This is it. I was like, okay, fine, maybe that was a dream. But then you've got that bit where he gets sodomized.
Ah, yeah.
So this is
a dream as well, isn't it?
Yeah, this is kind of continuing it, I believe. I believe this is all one sequence. And he's literally on all fours, butt naked, and his girlfriend, who I think has just been introduced by that point, you don't really know who she is, but she's the girlfriend.
Yeah,
Who is the creator, I guess, of this film. If you want to say that, she was the other person holding the camera for a lot of this stuff. She's all like sexy, and she has a huge pipe for a cock, and it's kind of dancing. She's doing all this like dancing stuff, and she's licking the end of this thing, but it's literally like a pipe, like a fucking, what would you call it? It's like a plumbing pipe, like almost like one of those.
It's quite flexible.
Yeah, exactly. There's a word for it, and I can't remember what it is, but And anyway,
if there's any plumbers listening, maybe they can advise.
Yeah, certainly.
Or sexual fetishists.
Like, they're probably just like, it's a pipe, so don't do that. And then after this kind of like dance thing, and it's all like a bit back and forth, and she's teasing with it, she puts it up his ass, but like it keeps going. It doesn't stop. And there's like smoke going on, and it's all like, again, sweaty, and it's going in like a fucking train into a tunnel kind of thing. It's just constant, and it's like, and he's like, whatever, and all this stuff. I believe that's when he wakes up.
That's when he wakes up. What do you think of all this then?
So I was like, I don't know, to be honest. Like, I was like, okay, so that thing at the station is like, something's after him. Okay, cool. Something's controlling someone that's after him, fine, which I think is part of the actual narrative of the movie. And I was like, this thing with his girlfriend, I think plays into something that happens a bit later. And I was like, is it something to do with the fact that he's like maybe conflicted about his sexuality? Maybe. And the reason why I say that is because later on down the line, spoiler, when it's all a spoiler, his girlfriend basically disintegrates and gets rebuilt as the fetishist.
Yeah,
and he's like got flowers and wearing makeup and all this stuff, and then they talk about being in love with each other and all this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is this him dreaming of his girlfriend, like sodomizing him because, you know, that's what he wants? I don't know. And this, maybe that's all part of this whole thing. Possible. I was thinking, is it literally this kind of the sub nature of like a BDSM kind of a thing that he's kind of toying with, and that the metal again is kind of playing its part, like maybe they're him and this other guy are both sexually inclined to be dominated by this metal stuff, which we find for the fetishist guy later on down the line, is actually associated with being beat by a metal rod, which I think it was actually, because if you see with that bit, which we kind of, well, let's go into it now, but with the homeless guy, he has this rod and he like twists it between where his dick is basically, and yeah, he beats him with it. And I was like, yeah, has he, did he like basically get molested or raped or whatever as a kid? And he's remembering it as this metal rod, or maybe a metal rod was used or something. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
And yeah, interesting.
And he's like, he's, it's warped him in some way, and he's got like this fetish now. It's kind of sexualized a inanimate metal object for him, and maybe him and this other guy, I don't know, are the same person, or they have the same kind of interests, yeah, and they're finding each other.
Yeah, because that metal pipe that he uses is the same one that he inserts in his leg.
Yeah, or at least it looks the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting ideas. One thing's for sure, yeah, he loves a bit of pegging.
Yeah, well, exactly. He's dreaming of it. Though it doesn't look like he's enjoying it that much at the time. so he wakes up, and then you get this like, and this is the bit that always stands out in my head, basically. They are like a sexually charged couple. And they're like, at one point they're eating food and she's like eating a sausage and making it all sexy and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a bit weird. And then he gets like, as he's kind of watching this, his dick turns into a pneumatic drill, whatever. or a drill, I should say. And it's like huge, it's massive. And it kind of goes through the table and then he like runs off to hide. And she's a bit like, oh, it's okay. Like, you know, I can take it. You know, I want to be with you, whatever, and all this stuff. And again, like, you kind of get a feeling that, like, she's into it. Like, she doesn't know what it is, but whatever it is, she's kind of into. So there's this weird, again, like, sexual kick thing with it.
There's a fear, then, but also a excitement about this sort of, like, some sort of burgeoning sexuality that's occurring between them. And is this around the time that he first acknowledges something like, this is happening as punishment for what we did?
Yeah, it's like, this is someone's revenge or whatever. Yeah, this is punishment.
So this is when they first allude to, like, they've done something and we're being punished for it, but we don't know what yet.
Yeah, we've not figured it out quite yet. And this kind of, again, is, I was thinking, goes back to what I was kind of saying before about, is this to do with his like sexuality and, you know, or a kink that he's into that she's like, okay, cool, like I want to share this with you kind of thing, but it's his like shame or something like that. He considers it a shame. I don't know. He's literally hiding in a closet or whatever. I think she like pushes the door down or whatever. And then he like starts getting really into it. And it starts getting a bit like forceful. And he's like, you know, you wanted it, you said you're into it or whatever. And then he's realizing he's like getting really close to hurting her. And he's kind of like backing away, like, oh no, you know, what am I doing kind of thing. And then they start kind of getting it on again. It starts getting like sexual and all this. Basically, she's like sitting on him. His dick is hard again or whatever. Turns into this drill and he basically drills to her between her legs and kills her. Or at least you think he's killed her. You're just like, fuck. So he puts her in a bath. At this point, he is like, and during the fight as well, he's just become more metal. Like he is now, shit's growing from him. It's starting to like really cover his body properly now. And there's this cool shot, and I fucking love this shot, where it kind of slows down and the music's going and there's loads of steam and smoke or whatever like going on all the time. And he stands up and all his body's kind of jagged where he's like got this bits of metal on under his whatever shirt and all this. And it's all over his face and he's like jerking up. And as he's kind of standing up and it's all slow-mo, you just see his drill dick just standing there. He's like, and I was like, fucking hell, that is a cool shot. It just looks fucking horrible and ridiculous and weird at the same time. And it just makes you sit back and go like, what the fuck am I watching?
It starts to look a bit like some really early, like really early German expressionism. Mm. Like especially where they had to put like a lot of makeup on these guys, like the silent ones. Everything looked like really high contrast and just a bit like it's all going to fall off any second as well.
Yeah, it's true. So around this time, the fetishist is basically like exposes himself essentially. And it's like, I think he calls him and he's like, yeah, you know, guide, you killed me or whatever. And you see like the flashes, because you kind of got flashes of this throughout the film. You have these flashes of them having sex against a tree. You're not really sure what you're looking at. And then they show the sequence of events, which is basically, yeah, they hit him with the car, put him in the boot, dumped his body, and then had sex in front of his dead body. Yeah, so you're like, oh, okay, cool. So this is what's happening. So, go on.
Have you seen or read Crash?
Yes, the book, sorry. Yes, I've read. Yeah. I haven't read it, sorry. No, I did read it, actually. I have definitely seen the film and I did read it as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Same sort of concept, isn't it? And what's that song? Warm Leatherette.
What's that?
So it was a song by, what's he called? Fad Gadget. Not Fad Gadget. It was the chap who set up Mute Records. Daniel Miller. And he produced all the early Depeche Mode.
Okay.
Had a big like underground hit with Warm Leatherette, which is based on that book, which is basically like the sexual excitement derived from being in a car after a crash and like feeling the warm leatherette and like the twisted metal and all this sort of thing.
Well, that was, I know J.G. Ballard did the book, but I think, wasn't that Cronenberg who did that film?
I think so, yeah.
Which makes sense. And I remember that was one of the, if I remember rightly, it's got, what's his name? Stargate guy.
I don't know.
Oh God, what's his name? It's going to annoy me. But basically, someone out there shouting me at it.
Christopher Robin?
Christopher Robin. Probably.
But she very clearly gets excited by the whole thing. Because then they're like, oh my God, like, do it here now by the tree.
Yeah, and they're like, they're looking right at him as they're kind of doing it.
Yeah. And then that kind of like ties into what he said earlier, like, this is our punishment for that.
Yeah, and the fact that she's like, I can't stop thinking about it or whatever, like, she's still like getting a kick out of it. You know, so it's weird. So then the girlfriend wakes back up and starts attacking him again. But then she basically dissolves into this weird goo and gets built back up to be the fetishist who's, come with flowers and makeup like it's a date or something.
It's really cool, that sequence. She's already been decorated. Her body in the bath has been decorated by flowers.
That's right, yeah.
Which I thought was kind of cool, interesting. Like everything's metallic and industrial, but he puts all these flowers on her dead body. But then when she reassimilates into the fetishist character, he's like holding them like a bunch of flowers.
That's a good point, actually. That's cool. Yeah, that's nice. And then basically from here on to the end of the film, it's a battle sequence, essentially, where they kind of chase each other with their like jet boot ability stuff. The fetishist guy, we kind of get flashbacks. I think it's really the flashback to the doctor guy who's just like, as you said, she's got the shrapnel in your brain. He says something else as well. I can't remember.
He basically says, I can't remove it. If I remove it, it'll kill you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Who do you think he's talking to? I thought he was talking to that fetishist character.
Yeah, that's what I presumed as well. That's what I presumed. Because we're seeing all that stuff from his, from this weird like TV style way of watching it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you get that sequence with the hobo and he's kind of like remembering this stuff as he's chasing him, which is a bit weird in itself. But he's like, during this, he's getting all like messed up. He hits like a bin or something at one point. But that's cool as well. Like, when he's like coming in to like, when I think like earlier on it was, and it's like everything he's going past, all the metal's getting like scrunched up. Like the bikes are going, or like he's affecting the metal world around him or whatever.
Yeah.
Just that sequence in itself, I was just like, that's fucking cool.
It is exciting. Like this visually, it's really stimulating all of this stuff. They're rushing around. And I thought, thinking back to what you said about like the elite athlete aspect, it's quite cool. Now you see him at times, he's dressed like a runner, a fetishist.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
like true. He's got a marathon runner's vest on and it's like really animated. So it's kind of like, he's just like whizzing along.
Yeah.
On like rampways and things, as if he's on a skateboard, but he's not. He's just like held in a pose and he's been like animated to like go wee.
Yeah, to go across the screen. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. He's still obsessed with this, like the most perfect human or whatever. It's kind of, you know, the post human thing I was talking about earlier. Basically, like, you could go into detail here with this bit, but they basically fight each other, but they're both like the salaryman guy is just getting more and more metal. The fetish guy like seems to control the metal. He doesn't seem to be necessarily made of that much metal until this fight really. And then he basically kind of gets absorbed and they break away and they come back together again. And they get kind of, instead of like beating each other, they go through this like smushing of of metalness. And then there's a bit where it kind of, it's just them two as humans like in this dark space like floating around, and that jazzy music kind of comes back and it's almost they're in this like in this different world now. They're in a different state of being. They've like transcended
the
physical realm and as such, and now their souls are like entwined.
Yeah, but it also feels very like something from a like romance movie, like they're drifting together and like they're going to kiss any moment.
Yeah, and this is where it gets really homoerotic, and there's lines about saying like about how they want to show the world their love for each other or whatever, something like that. So it's very specific now.
I think because that line was really jarring, and obviously we're only seeing it in translation, but it's something like, We like hate this world and we're going to conquer it with our love for each other.
That's right, yeah.
I was like, eh?
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's why like I was thinking, oh, it's like it's a homosexual thing or something like that. Don't know. But maybe it's not. I don't know, but that's kind of, I suppose, you know, you can read whatever you want into it. But yeah, by this point, they've grown, it looks so fucking weird. The salaryman is now just like half a fucking face basically coming out of this body at the bottom. It's huge. It's like the size of a car or something. And he's like, looks in so much pain. He's so strained, but he's like, he's got his eyes closed. He's like, I feel great. This is brilliant or whatever. And then the fetishist guy, it's randomly just like at the top, like on a fucking cake or something with a gun, with just a gun out at the side, which I was sort of thought just looks fucking weird. He seems to be the better off of the two, put it that way.
It's horrible when he's going, yeah, I'm loving this, and there's like all this stuff dribbling out of his mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, it's really gross. Like the whole thing is just horrible and gross. But yeah, you're right,
because he feels like he's the guy on the end of the human centipede.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's also like he's got like metal like teeth or something, like a metal rack of, it's like everything's like fucked basically, and because it's black and white, it just looks great, very visceral. And Yeah, it's just insane. Just the whole thing's insane. And then basically, then they're like, yeah, we're going to take on the world. And they fly through the streets as this being, just taking on the world as like as one single entity.
We're going to make it rust.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then that's it. It's the end of the film.
It's what did you think insane. About during that whole sequence? He specifically mentions that his very cells got infected because he inserted a rusty pipe. So he said, the rust spread throughout my cells. He said, you used a clean shaver with clean metal.
Yeah.
And I wondered why he pointed out that specific difference between the way they'd both been affected.
Yeah, I don't know. I reckon if I had to put a... I reckon it's a class commentary thing about saying that he had like, he's a salary man with a good job or whatever. And he was like the common, like, no, because when you see him at the beginning, like he looks like a worker, basically, if I remember rightly, he's kind of walking along within the factories or whatever. So maybe it's a case of like, you know, we're from different classes.
I didn't. So salary man is like middle class white collar worker.
Yeah.
Jargon, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't even thought about that, but now you've mentioned that. I mean, that's another obvious reading. It's the class divide. And then at the end of it, actually, you know, Japan, post-war Japan, is going to be industrialized. The middle classes and the workers. We're going to bloody take it to the world. But, you know.
Take up arms and go for it.
Not take up arms, but like produce a lot of like VHS players.
Yeah, well, all right, yeah.
And cars.
As well, I think it's also to do with the murder, like American Psycho style, like he got away, I say that as a reference, but it was kind of ambiguous, but the sense that he could get away with, you know, killing someone like that because he's rich and he was poor, so, you know, he was just nothing. But it's quite interesting. But they've all ended the same way. They both ended the same way, which is in this hulking mass of metal. It's really difficult to describe. I don't even know if anyone's not seen this film. I don't even know if it sounds good to them or not. But it's definitely like well worth checking out. I mean, as Dan said, I clearly have a lot of love for this film for a very long time. There's
just
nothing
like the
else
bit
quite
where the
like
thing goes
it.
Up his ass.
It's one of the highlights for sure.
Did you go, oh my God, someone's actually put it on screen. That's that dream I have every night.
I didn't know someone filmed this. This is a private thing. It's a great movie. So that's basically like the all I've got to say about it. There was two films, two sequels, Tetsuo 2 and 3, of which I saw neither.
Really?
Tetsuo
2,
I haven't seen them. So bear in mind, Tetsuo 2, Body Hammer was 92, and Tetsuo the Bullet Man was 2009, which is obviously a huge one. People have said that Tetsuo the Bullet Man is just utter garbage. A lot of people like Tetsuo 2, Body Hammer. There was obviously more of a budget. I believe it's in colour. There's a lot more kind of, it's more of a film basically. Obviously it's not like an art house thingy. But at the time when I got Tetsuo 2 was very hard to get hold of. Because bear in mind, like this, when I got this DVD, it would have been 2000. Because I had it on VHS actually. I don't think I had it on DVD. So
I think it was like, a video.
Yeah. So it probably would have been early 2000s. Like, maybe earlier.
Yeah, I think we watched it. It would have been like 99, 2000.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And if you think like back at that time, it was just hard to get hold of anything. Like that, and you had to pay like a lot of money as well to kind of get those films. And there was, I think it was Tartan. I don't know if they're still around anymore. Released a whole bunch of that stuff, and a lot of it, I believe, is off the back of J-horror, so like The Ring and I don't know, whatever, Dark Water and all this shit, whatever. So, yeah. No, wait, The Ring was like, was The Ring late 90s? I can't remember. Anyway, whatever. So, yeah, it's, I still need to see Body Hammer. I'd still go and watch it. But yeah, if you get a chance to see Tetsuo, again, it's only just over an hour. I think it will change your life. What do you reckon?
I don't like the sound of these sequels, really. But what I like about this film is that, you know, we have sort of like probed a little bit into the ins and outs and particulars of what's going on. But if you did that too much, then it starts to become like a sci-fi or something. And that what's beautiful about this is that it's all just representative of some, you know, themes that we've sort of like tried to draw out here. But yeah, you can watch it, and like you said, you can enjoy it almost like a free-form music video. It's one long, flowing, surreal piece of horror, really. Love the visuals. Love the, like, visual invention. All that aesthetics, brilliant. Keeps you, like, basically every scene keeps it interesting because it's always moving and presenting it in a different way. I think I would have chopped it. I could have done without the last 20 minutes, to be honest.
Really?
Even though, again, like, obviously it's important for sort of like wrapping up the thematic story. That's the point where it started to maybe drag a little bit, because it's like, oh, they're fighting again, coming away, fighting again, coming away.
It feels very for manga, me, like, that part.
Yeah, that's it. It ends nicely for me, like the revelation of the fact that they watched that guy die and then him sort of like manifesting himself out of the dead girlfriend's body. I was like, okay, that feels like a natural end. And then we get quite a lot of this like fighting and, yeah, like you say, a manga. Or for me, I was like, this feels like harking back to like an old Godzilla movie or something almost. These guys in costumes. Battling it out. And even though, like, yeah, visually it's all really cool and arresting, starts to get a little bit fatigued and some diminishing returns there. But yeah, I don't know, maybe you needed bits of that, but maybe that could have been a bit shorter. But all in all, yeah, really enjoyed it. Really unusual film, really really unique.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. I've really got a Nerd's Corner or anything for that, or any reviews. I don't know if you've got any, Dan.
No.
I hate it.
So here's one by Chainsaw Charlie. Title footage, Don't Bother. I've seen some rubbish in my time, but this is way up there at the top of the pile. Don't even waste your money renting it. At one point in film, the main character asks, what is happening to me? And then, I don't understand what is going on. He's not the only one. I could see no point in this film whatsoever. I think the only reason it's got a high rating by other reviewers is because it's one of those types of movies that film buffs just love to praise, especially when it's Japanese or Korean, etc. Avoid it. You'll thank me that you did. And then, only another one is a Foul Pet. Subject, not for me. Not sure what prompted me to butt this, but... And that's right, that's exactly what it says. Not sure what prompted me to butt this, but I hated it. Don't have time to describe how odd / awful this movie was. Not fair.
I hate when people take a quote from a film like that. Like, someone said, I didn't understand what was happening. Well, I didn't understand either. Awful.
Yeah, thinking they're funny with it.
Awful. Should we go to Nerd's Corner? So the soundtrack for this album by Chu Ishikawa was first released in 1992 on compact disc. Listen to these titles. Megatron.
Brilliant.
The Sixth Tooth.
Right.
Something in Japanese I'm not even going to try. Mausoleum, okay. Lost, Dinosauroid.
Okay, yeah.
And A Burned Figure.
Right. I don't know where, I don't know what any of those could relate to.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Thinking like, what scene's that from? Yeah. It's been reissued a few times on CD, blah, blah, blah. But it got a vinyl pressing in 2016.
Okay.
Unofficial though, Sam. So counterfeit, but people want the vinyl, right? And that's got a really cool cover. It's a picture of the fetishist with like big, wide open eyes. It looks really like late 70s, early 80s punk.
Right.
With all this like wire all around him and stuff. Yeah, first time vinyl issue of the cult cyberpunk movie soundtrack, Tetsuo. That's one thing we haven't mentioned, is this like labelling of the film as cyberpunk. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about it earlier. I kind of understand why people might think it. I guess like it's not really set in the future, which a lot of cyberpunk usually is. It's also not really like computer-ish. It's not technology in a sense of actual technology, like AI or chips that will make you do stuff, whatever. It is more a physicality thing to do with metal.
So it's more like industrialization rather than computerization.
Yeah. And the punk, like, and I mean, like, I don't have a hard definition of cyberpunk, but the idea of it a bit punky in the sense of it being like, okay, it's edgy. It's like a little bit, I don't know, like rock and roll or whatever. If you want, it's a bit of a lame dad term, but you know what I mean? it's the fact that it's kind of punk, but you know what I mean? It's just supposed to have like that bit of edge, that bit of like buzz or something. Yeah. It's supposed to be a bit different from the norm. It's kind of got that. I'd say it's got that kind of punky edge. It feels very sweaty and greasy and whatever, but the cyber thing just doesn't really fit. Like industrial punk or whatever, maybe, but that's, I think as far as the term cyberpunk and what's usually associated with it, it doesn't really fit. And also I think of cyberpunk as like bright colours. It's not normally black and white and dour. It's like, there's a bit more like neon and like flash to it, rather than this, which is completely the opposite.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think to call it cyberpunk's a bit of a misnomer and a little bit reductive. It's sort of like when people say 1984 is a sci-fi novel.
Yeah. It's like, you've kind of missed the point. I can see why you're saying it, but is it? Is it really? Mm-hmm. People like to just put things in a box. I mean, if anything, I'd say it's a horror film.
The horror of what, though? The horror of what? Is the whole thing an allegory just for... But is it... Like, what actually... What are they banging on about here? It's an allegory. I feel like it's an allegory for some sort of, like, post-war anxiety about Japan's place in the world and binding up with some sort of weird sexuality. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I'd say maybe it's broader in a sense of it's a social critique on, like the rise of technology, but also like the kind of Japanese suppressed sexuality stuff that's kind of as part of their culture as well, or at least our interpretation of their culture. I think it might be just a bit... Maybe I'm just thinking of it like as more of a general thing, maybe rather than post, but both works, to be honest. But I kind of saw it more as that.
Yeah.
It kind of fits in now as much as ever. Like the fact, and that's the kind of joke I was making at the top of this thing, which is the fact that we're trying to like constantly entwine, like we have been doing it for ages, but like entwine ourselves into technology and hook ourselves up and try and make ourselves better by, you know, pushing technological limits, whether it be through, you know, performance enhancers or stuff like that. Or, you know, when people, you see like Oscar Pistorius or whatever, like who runs faster than He's in jail.
I don't know if he's the best example.
I can't think of anyone else.
Oscar Pistorius, who killed his wife.
Killed his girlfriend. but he's the only person I know that's got like no legs, but has those artificial ones that run faster.
Synthesis of man and machine. Yeah.
I mean, again, it's not necessarily a technological thing, but I don't know.
When will people wake up and, you know, take on board the message? We've seen it here. We've seen it in Terminator 2. We've even seen it in the bloody Lawnmower Man.
1 and 2.
People cannot stop their relenting pursuit of synthesizing a new Cyberman.
Yeah, it's the future, Dan. But that's the thing. This takes it on a very base level. Like, it's not like we're in a clean room and I've been uploaded to the thing. This is like, I'm going to shove a piece of metal in me and keep shoveling metal into my skin until I become a robot.
Out my ass.
Exactly.
What a great film. And it's good. Like you said, it hasn't really aged too badly because it's so heavily stylized and it's got its own look. So still relevant today, still looks good today. So
It's kind of timeless, really. Yeah. Like, it's not really anything
like Casablanca.
Exactly. Casablanca and Tetsuo, Brothers in Arms. Cool, so that's it. So thanks for listening, guys. Check out Tetsuo. And what are we doing next week? Let's keep it a surprise and tune in and you'll find out. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Guys, thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram @anewwinter, Twitter @anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.